Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Yo, what's up, guys? How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Happy to have you here. Whew, I feel like every week I start with that kind of, whew. Life is certainly lifey these days. You know, you wake up every day, you see what's going to be in your space, in your family, in the news, and you're like, wow, 2020. It's no joke. But I'm doing well, and I hope today finds you well. And I hope that whatever is going on for you, you're like, damn, I can handle this. Sort of. I hope. No, really, I can. I can handle this. Yep, that's where I am. That's where we am. That's where I am. That's where we are. Okay, well, anyway, it is good to be with you. I'm happy to be here. I am going to discuss something pretty personal today. It's not just personal for me, it's personal for each of us, but it's personal for me in so much as it's work I'm currently doing. Sometimes I talk about stuff that happened a long time ago, and sometimes I talk about stuff that I'm really, really currently doing, and this is both. But I also think it's just so important for each of us to think about the concept of the childhood wounds and how they are affecting us today. It's so much bigger than most people have time for, which is legit because we're busy and we have other people to look after, like our own children and our coworkers and our friends and our partners and our animals. And that little kid that still lives within each of us tends to be last on the list of priorities in terms of who to deal with. But that is actually, it's a big mistake because that person is pulling the strings behind the Wizard of Oz curtain. And so we're definitely going to talk a lot about that today. We're going to talk about what happens when we don't consider our childhood wounds. We're going to talk about what can and cannot help us work on those wounds, and also the ways in which we can connect with our inner child and really get some huge benefit that affects us every day. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and that is what I am talking about in my own mind, in my own therapy, in my own journaling a lot lately, and it's been really helping me to flesh it out and unpack it. And so then I bring it right to you, because you know what? If I'm nothing else, I'm a big fucking science experiment for you to learn from. So, and it helps me. So we're all in it together. What can I tell you? So I am super excited at the pace at which my community is growing, my online community and my Instagram community. So do please feel free to find me in either of those places. In Instagram, it's at Nicole Sachs, LCSW. That's NicoleSachs, LCSW. And then on Facebook, it's Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW, which is a private community on Facebook that is really loving and supportive. And I really would, it's a huge benefit to go over there and to bring your questions, bring your needs, bring your worries. It's a great group. So yeah, I'm excited about the growth. I'm excited about carrying this message to as many people as I can. And so if you're new to the work, go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the resources tab, click on the retreats tab, all my stuff available there. Okay, so where can I start with this stuff? Okay, here's where I want to start. If you have heard my story, specifically if you've read my book, The Meaning of Truth, you know the story of how Journal Speak was born. And I'm not going to go into that whole story today because obviously that's super long, but I want to highlight a portion of it that was the most transformative portion of me being able to completely leave my chronic pain behind. And at the time, my symptom imperative was horrible back pain, lower back especially, but sometimes it would go sort of into my butt and down my legs. Sometimes it would go into my upper back, into my neck. It was the lower back pain, specifically the lower back pain, was the most devastating and the most inescapable when it came to its acute nature. It really stopped me in my tracks. It made it hard for me to even breathe. I was in absolutely excruciating pain. And so I, in this part of my story, I went into New York City and actually met with Dr. Sarno. This is my first time I ever met him. I had before been exposed to his work, but I had never met him. And he explained to me in that meeting that the only way I was going to ever leave these chronic issues behind permanently was to really excavate my subconscious when it came to my repressed feelings. And of course, at the time, he was really talking mostly about rage. He was saying repressed rage was the reason that people had pain. And I think he also, of course, acknowledged that there was repressed shame and grief and trauma and terror and all the things that we repress very naturally and adaptively as human beings. But he was mostly talking about rage. And he explained to me that the way I was going to get out of it is I had to journal. And by the way, anyone complaining that I make people journal speak 20 minutes a day, at the time, Dr. Sarno was prescribing 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening every day to journal and to excavate my essential subconscious so I could be out of pain. And by the way, if you are super new to this work, I've been getting some rather confused reviews on some of my work that people think I am saying positive thinking cures chronic pain, or that the pain is in your head, or any number of things. If you are one of those people that is starting to cock your head at what I'm saying because it's the first time you've listened to this, please go check out Dr. Sarno's book, The Mind Body Prescription, because I think that if you're really super new to this work and really scared and really immersed in your own chronic issues, you might be tempted to dismiss this out of turns, and I wouldn't want that for you. So I'm going to keep going, but if you're one of those people that is kind of getting a little defensive, please check out Dr. Sarno's work because he is an absolute genius. He was 50 years, 50, as an attending at the Rusk Center for Rehabilitation, NYU Medical Center. So he healed and saved my life. He was my mentor. He referred into my practice, and he's the brilliant genius upon whose shoulders I stand when I teach this work. So in any case, he assigned me this journaling task, and I understood what I needed to do. I had to make my lists. I had to, you know, take that kind of deeper look at the things that might be triggering my brain and my nervous system into sustained chronic fight or flight that was leading to a protective mechanism by which certain bodily systems were altered, which is how the pain was arising. And just so you also know, the pain is the same pain. Nobody's saying your diagnosis of migraines is not really migraines. Yes, it's migraines. The question is why? Why? Yes, it's back pain. Right, you still have the bulging disc, but bulging discs don't cause pain. They're incidental findings and we assume they cause pain. But really, your back pain is a result of what? Why? Why am I in pain? Am I in pain because I need surgery to amend those bulging discs? I'm going to postulate, no, you don't, because in my many, many years of practicing, I have rarely seen a back surgery completely eliminate pain. And if indeed, through what I believe is a palliative process, the pain eases in one section of the back, almost always I have heard one of two things. Either another section of the back hurts, or for some odd reason now I'm getting irritable bowel disease, or for some strange reason now I'm getting these horrible migraines or fibromyalgia, or the pain has spread. So just understand that this is not conjecture. I've been doing this work for years and years and years, as have my colleagues around the world. So he explained this to me. He explained to me the genesis of the pain in the world of repressed emotions, in the dance, in the beautiful but sometimes tragic dance between the mind and the body, because it's tragic just because it's so misunderstood. And he explained to me that by airing these repressed emotions, sorry, I'm choking on a granola bar. By airing these repressed emotions, the fight or flight reaction is no longer stimulated. The long-term chronic stress and fear and panic is calmed. And the pain signals that are very real and not in your head and paralyzing you with devastation and grief and pain stop firing. And I believed him. I had, you know, read his work. I had read the testimonials for hundreds of people, thousands, millions, however many people have done his work over the years. And I knew that there was something to it. So as I was doing this journaling practice and I was examining motherhood, at the time I had two very young children, both in cribs, both in diapers, unexpected to have babies this quick in succession, so I was overwhelmed. So I was exploring what is obviously and certainly the truth of that moment, which is I was tired and overwhelmed. I started going much deeper into the stuff underneath my exhaustion and my overwhelm. And I came to something, and like I said, I'm truncating the story, but you can certainly read all about it in a lot of detail in my book, The Meaning of Truth, and also in a lot of the stuff I put out, my talks. I don't know exactly where I talk about it all the time. But what I got to, which is relevant for our conversation today, is that my most devastating and raw wound that I was unaware of in parenting these two young children is that I was under the unconscious belief that making the perfect life for my children today was going to heal the wounds of my childhood. The pain and the suffering and the loneliness and the fear and the uncertainty and the anxiety that I experienced as a kid are mine. I did not understand that I couldn't make them go away by being a perfect mother to others. And as silly as it sounds on its face, I definitely think that I was trying to do that. And what's interesting in looking back is that I had enough conscious thinking about that as a child. I remember anytime I felt, you know, bullied or left out or lonely or alone or unsure or distrusting of my parents or whatever the feelings I had going on at the time, in my quiet moments, I would have these kind of very conscious thoughts of one day I'm going to get out of here and I'm not going to be under the thumb of people that I felt weren't always making smart decisions and I didn't feel safe. And one day, and this is such a childlike notion, but whatever, I was going to be, you know, Mother Earth. I was going to create this situation where I have these babies and they are seen and heard and felt, and I'm not going to move them around and I'm not going to make them change schools and I'm going to be uber attentive to their every need. And that's going to take away this pain. I honestly feel as a child that I really thought that. But here's the thing about childhood thinking and wounds. Unless we do the work to really understand them, even though we grow up, that pattern of thinking, that salve to those wounds, it doesn't change. You know, kind of like I also thought, you know, because my father was really a bit of a, oh, look, we say, I mean, I don't want to use super nasty word, the word Nazi just came to mind, and I was going to not use it, but look, I just said it anyway. He was and then the word Führer just came up. Jesus, Nicole. But he was rough on me. He lorded over my schoolwork. He was incredibly critical of me if I did not think or act or perform the way he wanted me to. And of course, this is my perception as a child. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought, but my perception is that it was pretty fucking bad. And so I also thought in my childlike way that if I was perfect, I was safe. Now, you might be listening to that as a grown-up yourself and say, yeah, but logically, we all know that first of all, there's no such thing as total safety. And second of all, there's no such thing as being perfect. But I really thought it. And like, if you look at it from my childhood point of view, it makes tons of sense, because what felt unsafe to me was walking into the door after a long day of school and having my father, who was unemployed for, I'd say, at least half of my childhood, be home and kind of waiting for me in some way, shape, or form, and wanting to know what I learned today, that day, and what I had for homework. And if indeed I could say, here's what I learned, let me perfectly explain it to you, and here's my homework, I know exactly how to do it, or better yet, I've completed my homework in my free time at school or whatever, I was safe, because he would leave me alone. And I just desperately wanted to be left alone by him, because he stressed me out and he made me feel bad about myself. And he also made me feel incredibly, I was scared. I was just so scared of him. And so when I say this, what I'm saying is that it took me years, well into adulthood, well into being a very smart, studied psychotherapist and all the things that I accomplished, to really understand that perfectionism did not equal safety. And in fact, as you've heard me discuss before in this podcast, perfectionism is actually quite toxic, because there's no such thing as being perfect. And it creates a dynamic within us where we are constantly scanning the horizon for where we messed it up. Where did you screw it up? Where is the B in your C of A's? And that was me for a very long time. But understand, these are our childhood wounds. They're wounds because they hurt. But they are not inherently bad. They're just the way we were shaped and formed. They're the soil in which we were grown. And it is necessary to examine them as they are. So this brings me to my next point. One of the ways that I believe we are all really misguided and confused, I'm going to speak for myself. One of the ways in which I have been misguided and confused is that I have been at times under the impression, similarly to what I just talked about, was that healing one thing in my life would eliminate a separate pain. So, you know, being a great parent and showing up in a way for my kids that I'm proud of would heal the sad, aching little girl inside of me, which is never going to happen. It can help. It can make you feel good in the moment, but the work is separate. And the reason why this is so important is because what I started noticing in myself is I would feel a devastation when my children weren't happy. If no matter how I tried, one of my kids was left out, not invited to the party, not wanted. If no matter how I tried, my child was not successful in their efforts and life slapped them in the face, or they were successful in their efforts and they still judged themselves like totally harshly and still didn't feel good about their effort, I would feel a devastation that did not feel normal. You know, I always say to people, if your reaction to a situation goes way beyond the logical reaction to a situation, something else is going on there. And I definitely think that what was happening to me is I was trying my best, really putting my heart into it, showing up even when I didn't want to, by the way. And that's another part of this puzzle, is that if I'm showing up and stepping over my own needs to show up for other people, which we all so often do, especially as parents, then if their outcomes are not golden, what does that mean about us? And what I realized was that was going on, but in tandem to that going on, it also was what hung in the balance of my perfect parenting and their perfect outcomes was my entire emotional world of the sweet, sad, scared, aching little girl inside of me. She was fucking waiting, staring, pleading out the window into the abyss. Who's coming back for me? Who's gonna save me? And here I am, you know, with my sword and my shield out every day in the real world, being the perfect mom, volunteering in the class and driving everyone everywhere and saying yes to everything and the Christmas tree and the, you know, the Hanukkah lights and everything is perfect at all times. And they're still not freaking happy. And then the little girl back there says, "What about me?" So what I want to say about this is that I want you to envision two rivers. And these two rivers run parallel to one another. Beautiful, forceful rivers that carry the power and the energy to do so much, to just cleanse the soul and to quench the thirst of anything they need to quench. But these two rivers will never intersect. One of them is the forceful, beautiful river of your life force, of your childhood, of whatever pain and brokenness it felt like, whatever challenges, whatever character and strength you have built from overcoming them. That is a powerful river and it runs. And the other river that runs parallel to that, but will never cross, is your adult empowered self. That woman or man that can do what we can with what we're given and can show up as a great parent and a great friend and a loving partner and someone who understands equanimity and someone who understands justice and someone who will fight for those who have less and somebody who can be a loving partner to someone who needs support and a colleague and a friend and all those things. That's the second river. But no matter how well you perform in the realm of that second river, it will not heal the first. It will affect it. You know, your rivers flow next to one another. The current flows next to one another. You can feel that energy from one river to the next. But doing well in one will not heal the other. And the reason this is so important to embrace is because if we put all our efforts in this grown-up current river, thinking that by doing well enough, if you just show up enough, if you just get that gold star from work or that perfect smile from your partner, if the birthday gift just really lands, or if you help your kid with this essay in school and they get an A and they feel great about it, if only, then all that other stuff is going to go away. Then what happens is when it fails, because it will, you feel like your current life is a failure and you put that need for perfection on other people in your life. And it still doesn't work. So then you feel lower and all of this stuff informs your emotional repression or your need to repress, the imperative to repress because there's just too much to feel. And that reservoir starts to overflow. The feelings are relentless in their reflex to rise. And then your back goes out, your shoulder goes out, your migraines are flaring, your fibro is so bad, your pelvic pain is terrible, IC, skin disorders, irritable bowel disease, on and on and on. And then all you have to do is look in that direction because that's a flashlight in your face. When we're in pain, we can do nothing else. And here you are attending now to your symptoms on a daily basis, because what other choice do you have? I've been there, I understand. I mean, if your body is screaming, there's no space for anything else. And not only then are you in despair because you're not able to show up for that second river that means so much to you, but it means even more to you because you don't even realize that you're trying to use this life to heal a pain that stands alone. Now understand, even though these rivers will never intersect, that doesn't mean all is lost from healing the wounds of our childhood. In fact, it's amazing news because now we can work with what's really going on here. So let's move to our first river, this beautiful current of life force, the challenges and the character that's been built, but there's a lot of pain still there. You know, I know that we all have character. You know, I have enough character to write a whole freaking screenplay with 10 different people in it, but it doesn't mean that that makes it feel better when I'm triggered. When my current life triggers me into the pain, that space of feeling alone, that space of feeling misunderstood, that space of feeling ashamed of myself because I'm just a little too much for people to handle, or, you know, people don't want me around, or whatever I thought could have been true, could have not been true, it doesn't matter. My perception is my reality. Everyone's perception is their reality. If I didn't think people wanted me around and I didn't show up, then I'm pretty sure they didn't want me around, and I could be convinced of that. So that first river, when we understand that it's not getting solved by being perfect in the moment or showing up for other people or finding a person, like let's say in a relationship, let's say you had a very abusive relationship as a young person, finding the same type of person today, but now you're much more mature, but you're gonna like fix and save and solve with that person and maybe it'll stop the pain from the first time. No. When we're doing that, we're not in the right space for healing. But when we know that that's not the case, then we can be in that first river. So what can we do? Well, the first thing that we can do to work on the wounds of our childhood, to really feel more free and better, to live this beautiful life that we have been handed, is to bathe it in self-compassion. I know you hear me talk about this a lot. Self-compassion is an action. It is not a concept. When we stop using our actions of the day to heal and fix and erase the pain of the past, we can press the pause button and we can just be in the pain of the past. Bring tremendous compassion to that little girl or boy. Hey, kid, I see you. I see you. Actually, I'm not clouded anymore by needing to see you through my successes and failures of my current life. I see you, little Nicole, laying in your bed, insomnia, hour after hour, watching that clock flip. I see you. I'm with you. Feel how hard it is for you. I can go back right now. I'm going to lay next to you in bed. I feel you, honey. I can put my arms around you. I can be with you. I know you feel like you're a piece of shit. I know you feel like you're not good enough and you're not well liked and everything's too hard. I'm just going to sit with you for that feeling. And if you've heard me talk at all about inner child work, the inner child work that I teach, so much of it is not about talking to your inner child. It's about listening. I have a meditation that I offer on this, and I have a section of my virtual retreats. I'm always teaching on the inner child work because it's so important to go back to these stages, these kids. So many of them live inside of us, and to say, hey, so let's pick an age. So the age I'm thinking about with my terrible insomnia was probably like third or fourth grade. So I think that's like, 10 or 11 years old. And so going back to 10-year-old Nicole, and the exercise is very simple, and you can do it as a journal speak exercise because you can just go back and kind of envision yourself at whatever age, and it could be a different age every day, and just picture. So I'm going to picture her. Okay. So I know that, she had long hair, sort of similar to the exact way I look now. Long hair, parted in the middle, sometimes pigtails. I had a canopy bed. It was a white eyelet canopy bed. I used to hang things from the top of the canopy. Like I remember I had a Saturn star and a half moon, and they would hang on these invisible strings from, they were sort of plush from the top of my canopy, and at night I would sort of kick my feet up and I would kick them and they would swing back and forth in the moonlight coming through my window. And I can picture her, I can picture me. And so the exercise is to get that kind of really lovely, compassionate, visceral picture of yourself. And then to sit down next to her so I can see myself sitting on her bed with her, you know, not really imposing on her space, maybe a few feet away, looking at her and saying, "Hey, sweet love, tell me what it's like to be you. Tell me what you think, what you fear, what you feel, what brings you joy, what brings you worry. I am fascinated. Tell me what it feels like to be you. I just want to listen." And then you let her speak. And in my journal speak practice, I just speak as her. I let her speak in the first person and tell me what it's like to be her. And you know what? My responsibility as a grown-up who knows that this work is for me, this work is to give me peace and give me contentment and give me relief, is I listen without having to tell her anything. I don't have to tell her it's going to be okay. I don't have to tell her, "Oh, no, 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 you have no idea. Like, things are going to get so much better. You're just going to be the best." Nope. Because she doesn't know that, and that has nothing to do with her experience. She just needs to talk, because guess what? No one ever just let her talk and said, "Thank you for sharing that with me." Hand to heart, eyes soft and connected. "Thank you for sharing that with me, honey. Thank you. I know how hard it is, and I know how much you needed to say that." Nobody does that for any of us, by the way. And you know what? I have to say, as a parent, if I'm going to just put on my parenting hat for a second, it's freaking hard. It's hard to just do that when your kids are in despair or in rage or in terror. It's hard. I get it, which is why this reparenting stuff so often has to come from within us as we look to that first river. And as we give ourselves the attention that we needed, that maybe we are the only people that can properly do this for ourselves. Maybe the people in our lives could never be capable, and maybe that's just the human ego. I don't know. But this work, guys, this work is so healing. And when she's done talking, you thank her and you tell her, "I will be back as many times as you need me, anytime. Call me and I'm coming." And you have to understand that with children, as with adults, as with animals, trust is built moment by moment, and it doesn't happen overnight. But if you keep showing up for her, she will learn to trust you. She will be more forthcoming in a shorter fashion with what she needs to say, and it will become that you don't have to have these sort of more serious, more boundary journaling conversations with her. She'll just be with you. She'll be chill. She'll be hanging with you. You know, you're going through your day, and instead of getting all wound up about things that you usually get wound up about, you'll feel the ease of her. She's not silent and repressed anymore. She's free. She said her piece. She let it go. She's just a kid. You know how quickly kids let stuff go when they've really said their piece? It's available to you guys. And the biggest barrier to this is thinking that we're solving a problem being in the wrong river. Because this inner child work and this stuff about healing our childhood wounds, it's hard work, but what's much harder than doing the work I'm describing is when you don't even realize you have to do it at all because you're so busy over here trying to show up as a perfect blah, blah, or blah, and being completely perplexed and despairing when it's not working, because it's never going to work, because the rivers don't intersect. So no matter how amazing you are right here, it doesn't change the healing that needs to be done over here. If you saw my hands, you'd see one hand is representing one river and one hand is representing another. But you know what? This is audio, so I have to explain that to you. Oh my goodness. It's so important. Like when I'm talking to you, I just want to tell you how I'm feeling. I'm just feeling so much emotion, like a little bit teary and a little bit full of like joy and energy, a little anxious. I feel a little anxious. Now remember, anxiety and excitement are metabolized exactly the same, are expressed exactly the same in the human body. You hear me talk about this a lot. The only difference between anxiety and excitement is our perception of the situation. So I don't know if I'm feeling anxious, like that kind of tightness in my chest and sort of like butterflies in my stomach because I'm anxious or because I just am excited to share this, or maybe I'm a little scared because it's so important to me. It's like, I'm scared you're not going to get it. But that's on me, not you, because who the hell knows what people get. I just have to relax. But you know what I mean. And so I'm feeling that because I just feel how precious this is, how precious and how important this work is for each of us, and how much freedom I personally feel when I can settle into the knowledge that these two rivers are different and that I have the opportunity to do the work where the work will have power to transform me. Because we all just want to feel better. We all just want to feel better. We all just want to feel the best we can feel each day. Okay, enough of me. I hope that this gave you a bit to think about and maybe some actions to take. Remember that we are all simply a net-net of our next right considered action, that we are not able to change everything in one fell swoop. Our lives are consistently small, measurable actions fueled by love, one at a time, that leads to the kind of transformation we're looking for. So I wish that for you. I wish you energy to get to whatever the next right considered action is for you today. And I send you love wherever this finds you. I hope that 2020 isn't kicking your ass too hard, because God knows it can. And I send you love and light. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with Nicole Sachs. See you next time. Bye-bye.